Good afternoon, committee. I call the meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order, and there is a quorum present. The first order of business will be approving the minutes, and I hope all the committee members have had a chance to review the minutes. And if so, Representative Vice Chair Hill, would you please make the motion to approve the minutes for, let's see, what day are we looking at? January 24th, Tuesday.
Yes, I move the minutes of January 24th meeting.
Thank you. Any discussion? All right. Then all in favor of approving the minutes for Tuesday, January 24th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Great. Thank you. Thank you, committee. The minutes are approved. Well, we're set and ready to go with our first bill, which is House File 347. Representative Howard is our lead author on that, and who is not a member of this committee, but welcome. And Representative Frazier, would you like to make a motion to move House File 347 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. That is my motion. So moved.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. All right. Representative Frazier moves that House File 347 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy. But right now it's before our committee. Thank you. And welcome to the committee, Representative Howard. And please introduce yourself for the record and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair Pryor and members of the committee. It's nice to be in front of education policy. I don't get that chance very often. And I still see some new faces that I need to meet, so it's good to be here today. This bill, House File 347, is a bill that deals with something I think that we can all agree on a bipartisan basis matters greatly, which is the safety of the drinking water that our kids drink while they're at schools. Since the crisis in Flint, Michigan, we've seen a greater recognition of the danger of lead in our water. And states all across the country are taking steps to mitigate and address what is a pervasive problem for buildings that were built in the 1980s and prior, which of course there are many in our state. And the reality is, with the availability of new health data and considering what other states are doing in this arena, Minnesota can do better at providing support for our schools to make sure that the school water that they're drinking is safe. And this bill seeks to take steps to do that in a number of ways. I'd make a few comments. Currently, Minnesota schools are testing for lead and working in partnership with Minnesota Department of Health and the Minnesota Department of Education on mitigation strategies. However, we don't really have a complete picture at the statewide level of what this challenge really looks like, because we don't have really any centralized reporting. There's studies from other states that say 20, 30, upwards of 40% of schools are challenged by unsafe levels of lead. And so we don't really have a sense of what the challenge is here in Minnesota. The other challenge is that it's really costly for our districts to mitigate for lead in their schools. It's not often as costly as a lead service line replacement, but things like plumbing fixtures, et cetera, especially if a district has many buildings, it can be costly. And it's particularly a challenge for some of our rural school districts that might not have as large of a levy or a property tax base to address some of those challenges as they arise. And so this bill attempts to address some of those issues in a few ways. First, we create a centralized reporting mechanism so that policymakers can get a better handle on this issue. As I mentioned, a national survey of districts found that 37% of districts that tested for lead came back with elevated levels. And we don't know what that looks like here in Minnesota, which is why we need this centralized data reporting. The other piece is we're moving the threshold for remediation from 15 parts per billion to 5 parts per billion. And what this means from a practical standpoint, well, first, there's no safe level for lead in our drinking water. We set this 15 parts per billion standard as part of legislation passed 5-6 years ago. Since then, we have better research that indicates that we really ought to lower the standard for contents at 5 parts per billion. That's the maximum level of lead that's available to be present in bottled water. And so we think that's a good standard to set here in Minnesota. And lastly, if we're going to ask our districts to test and mitigate for this lower level or lower threshold, we believe it's important to provide a funding resource for our schools to meet these challenges. And this bill does that through a funding source that we've worked with our districts that they prefer. Lastly, I just want to thank the Minnesota Department of Health, the Minnesota Department of Education, and our school districts for a continued collaboration over more than a year. This creates some intersections that aren't always present, and so that communication has helped us draft a better bill. The other thing is I want to thank members of this committee on both parties from last year that were here that voted unanimously in support of this bill. It's been almost unanimous bipartisan support in the previous session, and look forward to that kind of collaboration in the future. And with that, I would turn it over to my testifiers, who I think are available virtually.
All right, thank you, Representative Howard. First on my list is I have Molly Cadin, who I believe is in public health and also with the Sierra Club. And so, Ms. Cadin, are you then on virtual, and are you able to hear us?
Correct, Chair Pryor. Thank you. I can hear you. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. So please identify yourself for the record again and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, Chair Pryor, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Molly Cotting. I'm an environmental health and equity advocate, a public health researcher, and a volunteer with Sierra Club. I'm also a Minnesota parent and resident. Last year, I worked with Representative Howard and co-sponsors on House File 3265, as well as legislators in Washington State, in 2021 legislation that strengthened protections from lead in school drinking water. I really appreciate the unanimous and bipartisan support in last year's effort to push for new protections in schools, and I'm really confident that this year House File 347 will be successful in passing. As Representative Howard stated, the best scientific evidence available agrees that there's no safe level of lead exposure. All exposures are toxic and accumulate in the body. Despite recent federal commitments to replace lead service lines and renewed efforts to fund replacement through our state legislature, our school drinking water is still at risk of lead contamination from aging plumbing parts inside of school buildings. I commend our state for passing required testing of school drinking fixtures for lead in 2018. I know that we can improve upon these protections through more comprehensive data management and clearly defined action levels for students. Our state has no centralized system to track lead testing results, so we don't know the full extent of our school's lead exposure. If Minnesota Department of Health were appointed to manage state testing data, we'd have a better picture of how many outlets need attention and the steps that were taken to fix each. Data management and data transparency are vital for remediating fixtures to a health-based standard. Currently, Minnesota does not define a specific lead action level for school water. Our state statute, section 121A.335, states that schools must act above a level where action should be taken as set by guidance. But we need to more clearly describe what constitutes an unacceptable risk. This clarity helps schools protect students. Five other U.S. states have passed a 5 part per billion standard, including Illinois, Michigan, Montana, and Washington State. Minnesota needs to update our statute to reflect the best current evidence on lead absorption from drinking water, the limitations of current testing methodologies for detecting lead, and changing guidance from the CDC, which has decreased the reference point for triggering therapy procedures for blood lead levels as low as 3.5 parts per billion in children. This bill also designates sustainable and flexible funding. These grant dollars will support schools so they can place certified filters and replace aging valves and fixtures. And perhaps most importantly, we must provide protection from elevated blood lead levels to the highest risk exposure groups. Lead exposure is an environmental justice issue. A disproportionate exposure burden exists for communities of color and lower socioeconomic status due to decades of disinvestment in systemically racist housing policies like redlining. While all students would benefit from the protections of this bill, those that stand to gain the most protection from tighter action levels and strong remediation protections are the children who may have overlapping exposures from leaded paint, service lines, or dust and soil. Our children deserve to have safe drinking water when they go to school. To recap, this bill contains three vital components to ensure better health equity and more health protections for our most precious investment in the future, Minnesota's children. It outlines a strict and defined action level to minimize the risk of elevated blood lead levels. It also ensures transparency and centralized management of testing results so MDH can have the data it needs to get a comprehensive scope of lead in school drinking water, drinking fixtures. And finally, it affords funding to schools to remediate, ensuring communities with older buildings on tribal lands and in low-income communities have the resources they need to fix the problem and protect kids. And so for these reasons, I urge you to vote yes. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Cotting. Next up, we have Steve Ring, who is a volunteer chair of a water protection group with the North Star chapter of Sierra Club. Mr. Ring?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. Please identify yourself again and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Ring, and I'm here as a volunteer on behalf of the Sierra Club North Star chapter. I chair their Waters and Wetlands Stewards Committee. I also worked for more than 30 years at the Minnesota Department of Health, much of that time in the public health laboratory doing lab analyses of probable toxins and pollutants. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of House File 347. First, I want to thank the legislature for passing the School Lead Protection Bill in 2018. That was a big step forward, and it is the foundation for HF 347. I also thank you for your strong bipartisan support of a similar bill in the last legislative session. There are a few preliminary facts about lead exposure that are pertinent to this discussion. First, lead is a potent neurotoxin. It can affect cognitive development and behavior at amazingly low concentrations in the blood. There is no safe level. Children are especially susceptible. Secondly, lead exposure is cumulative. Lead that is brought into the body from one source is added to the burden from previous exposures. Third, there is no known therapy for lead in low concentrations in the blood. And finally, lead damage is permanent. So preventing exposure in the first place is critical. The scientists and doctors that evaluate the impact of lead exposure on children and adults find a clear picture that tells us the more we learn about it, the lower the standard must be. A major provision of HF 347 is a stricter, more definitive standard for lead exposure. The current guidance for school lead testing is somewhat flexible. A few years ago, that was a reasonable approach. But our knowledge of the damaging impacts of lead exposure has increased greatly since then. Virtually every agency, academy, and nation that advises on or regulates lead concentrations in drinking water has reduced their earlier recommended levels of lead in drinking water. Many now advocate for the 5 parts per billion standard that this bill requires. The FDA requires bottled water to meet the 5 parts per billion standard. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends, and I quote, state and local governments should take steps to ensure that water fountains in schools do not exceed water lead concentrations of 1 part per billion. We need to reduce or eliminate children's exposure to lead, and the 5 parts per billion standard advocated by this bill presents a major step toward that goal. You are all familiar with the lead service line crisis in Flint, Michigan. You may also be aware there's federal money available to help communities replace their lead service lines. So why do we need a bill to test school drinking water at a tighter standard, develop plans for remediation, and report the results in a standardized way to the Minnesota Department of Health? The reason is that lead in drinking water can also come from many materials in a plumbing system. Faucets, valves, taps, internal plumbing lines, and lead in solder can all influence the amount of lead in the water. And lead levels in the water within the plumbing system of schools can vary greatly from tap to tap. Therefore, it's important to test all those taps and replace or fix the problem materials. Generally, the longer the water is in contact with a lead-containing material, the higher the lead concentration in the water will become. Schools are a place where water may sit in pipes for extended durations, over weekends, vacations, and summer breaks. Just by sitting dormant in these pipes, the water can build up high concentrations of lead. Elevated lead concentrations have been associated with low-income communities, both urban and rural, with older plumbing systems. The 2018 Minnesota law required public reporting of lead testing results, but there was no standard format and no central repository for the information. The inclusion of those provisions in this bill will have a huge benefit for protecting Minnesota kids. Reliable data will allow us to track trends and identify problems that might otherwise be missed. It will be much easier to establish patterns, to learn from common problems in different school districts, and to create a picture of how well Minnesota is addressing the school-led problems. We understand that we must support schools to remediate to the lowest possible lead levels. That's why it's so important that funding be attached to this bill for grants to replace fixtures and add filters to fountains and faucets. We want schools to recognize that they will have support for addressing this issue. I urge you to support HF 347, and thank you again for the opportunity to speak to this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Ring. We appreciate hearing from you today and are grateful that you could join us remotely. Representative Howard, we have a public testifier. Should we go ahead with this testimony and then return to you?
Yes, please.
All right. Thank you. For public testimony, we have Josh Downham of the Minneapolis Public Schools. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Josh Downham with Minneapolis Public Schools. And just to expedite things, I'm also testifying on behalf of AMSD, the Schools for Equity, MSDA, MASA, the Superintendents Association, MASBO, the Business Officials, and St. Paul Public Schools. So you get it all in one. So I want to thank Representative Howard. He and I and a number of folks have worked on this bill over the last year and a half and greatly improved it. And I really do believe that this is a good bill. And with a few little tweaks that we're going to make to some of the reporting language, I think it will be a great bill. So, Madam Chair, you know, lead exposure is a critical issue. Schools recognize that. We're implementing flushing regimens in our building. We're replacing fixtures, and we're doing whole building infrastructure replacement when we open up those parts of the building. That work is ongoing. When we lower the threshold from what the effective rate at the federal level is actually 20 parts per building for a school down to 5, we can do that through those mechanisms that I just outlined. It's something that's being done by our schools, and we can meet that standard. So we're happy that this bill recognizes that we can continue to do that flushing, which is a critical component. So if you have an old building with those old lead lines, as the last testifier said, if the water sits in that lead line over the weekend, that needs to be flushed out prior to students arriving. And there's we have about 2/3 of our buildings in Minneapolis that have a flushing regimen in place each day. And it's effective. So I'm going to actually call your attention to a document in your folder, which is a testing report for Dowling Elementary School in Minneapolis. And this is one of our smaller elementary schools. And we recently completed this test for the school, and we found that one of the drinking fountains had a level of 4.7. When we went back and retested that after flushing it, it reduced within a minute, it reduced it down to below the action or the level that they can actually test. So you'll note that it says below 2. That's as fine-tuned as the reporting can be. So we got it down to as low as it can go by simply flushing. We appreciate that this bill allows us to continue to do that. And then where a public utility is providing water to the building that is above 5 but below 15, because the federal standard for water utilities is 15 parts per billion, in that strata of 15 to 5, the school wouldn't be required to take on the full cost of mediation or to mitigation for that. And I think Representative Howard and Representative Jordan and others have looked at other ways of accomplishing that at the public utility level. But in terms of replacing fixtures and the pieces within the building, that's what's contained in this. We think it's a good bill, and we can make it work. Thanks, Madam Chair.
I have a question, if you'll entertain it at this point. Just understanding this, the flushing of the system, and heard just mentioned the idea that, yes, sometimes it can be flushed out, and then when you test it next, the quality is good, but that at the end of the day, the lead's back. So can you describe a little bit more about how this mitigation strategy is used and how the testing really is getting at through the day, whether or not the water is safe.
Thanks, Madam Chair. It does take time over the course of a day or evening or weekend for those lead levels to build up. And it really depends on what the piping is. Mm-hmm. And so in the mid-90s, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting whether it's 93 or 98 because they're two different years, they changed the lead in solder standard, and it dramatically decreased the amount of lead. So you could have copper piping running in a building built in 1990, but it's using a solder that is actually like 25%, if I recall correctly, of lead. If it's sitting on that one junction, then a little bit of the lead will get in there. So over the course of a day, the water's moving in a building fine so that you don't have that buildup at those solder joints. It's really the overnight and weekends where you actually see levels going up above 5. And that's where we would, well, and here's a good example. These are all first draw samples at 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. So they were still at or below 5 for all of these in this particular building. So it really does depend on the infrastructure within the building. And some will be higher depending on the age and when that infrastructure was actually replaced.
Thank you. Thank you for answering my question. All right. So at this point, I think we can turn to member questions and discussion. And Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You actually kind of asked my question too about the flushing system, which also gives an added benefit of preventing Legionnaires' disease. So thank you so very much.
All right. And Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question for the bill author. And thank you, Representative Howard. I think this is an important issue. We don't want lead in our water, period, and especially in our schools. Do have a question, though, based on what I've just heard, that tweaks are coming. So is it my understanding that there are going to be some amendments coming for this bill?
Representative Howard.
Chair Pryor, Representative Bennett. There are some funding pieces. We're still doing a fiscal note, so those pieces. We've had some conversations whether we need a added language to make sure that school districts are included in the discussion about what reporting looks like. That's kind of been a conversation of whether we need to do that in legislation or whether sort of as a work group understanding. So that's the kind of TBD piece, but to the extent there was a conversation about tweaks, the specific conversations we've had with the districts has been around that reporting. And there may be some, you know, small pieces from the agencies and workability, but not there isn't broad stroke changes that I know of that are being considered.
Thank you, Rep. Howard, Madam Chair.
Yes.
So just a question for you then, Madam Chair, if there are amendments coming that would affect policy, reporting things or that kind of thing, will we hear those in this committee?
Well, the path of the bill right now, and I think the next stage of examining it is our health committee. And then I believe from there it would return to education finance. And then because it's in education finance and education policy, I think we will have the opportunity to, before it's incorporated into a final bill, if it is incorporated into a final budget bill, that we would have the opportunity to be aware of the policy changes, but I think it sounds like much of this is related to the actual a financial piece as much as policy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just express that if there are policy changes, then I would hope we would see that come back around again at some point so this committee can see that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. All right. Seeing no more member comments, I will return to the bill author, Representative Howard, for your closing comments.
Chair Pryor, members, to my testifiers, really appreciate the discussion and support, hopefully, and look forward to moving forward with this bill this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Howard. And with that, Representative Frazier renews his motion to refer House File 347 to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you.
And House File 347 is on to its next committee. All right. We have next Representative Moeller with House File 362. And this is a bill that will be establishing comprehensive school mental health services lead positions. All right. Welcome to the committee, Representative Moeller. And for this, we'll be hearing House File 362 from Representative Moeller. It is our intention to re-refer this bill to the Committee on Education Finance. Representative Joachim, would you like to make a motion to move House File 362 before the committee to be recommended then to re-refer to the Committee on Education Finance?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that House File 362 move the bill before committee with the intention to re-refer it to Education Finance.
Thank you for the motion. All right. Representative Joachim then has brought House File 362 before us to be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All right. And before you introduce your bill, Representative Moeller, I understand that you do have an author's amendment. And if you could, quickly identify yourself for the record and give us a brief explanation of the author's amendment, we can adopt that.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Would you like me to describe the amendment, or do we need to move? Do you want to move it first?
Yes, please.
Okay, great. Thanks. The amendment is really simple. I know we say that a lot around here. But this bill covers both student mental health, teacher and staff mental health. And there was one section where we forgot to add school staff in. So it's just really making it consistent with the rest of the bill. That's the A1 amendment.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
And then, yes,
I'll
Chair,
move
you.
The A1 amendment before the committee.
All right. So we have the A1 amendment before us. Thank you, Representative Moeller, excuse me.
It wouldn't be the first time, Madam Chair.
Any discussion of the A1 amendment? All right. Seeing no discussion, we've moved to adopt the A1's amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the amendment is adopted. All right. Well, now we have the bill before us in the form that the author would like us, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Well, hopefully this is the third time is the charm. This is the third time I've been presenting this bill, although this committee makeup looks very different than it did when I was on it. So I know a lot of new members here probably haven't heard this bill before. But House File 362 creates two lead positions at MDE related to student mental health and teacher staff mental health. When I started working on this issue back in 2018 with folks who were experts in student mental health, it was identified that we had a real gap in Minnesota with not having a place for school districts to go when they needed this information. And sadly, with my district, there had been some suicides, and that's sort of what prompted me to work on this issue along with my testifier, who you'll hear from today, and who's really done a lot of research on what we have in Minnesota, what other states around the country have, and identifying these gaps. So like I said, this bill will create two positions at MDE that will help provide a clearinghouse for student mental health needs that districts can use. And we also found that there was a need to provide the same level of information and resources for teachers and school staff. Prior to the pandemic, we heard that student mental health was a continued concern, and that was prior to the pandemic. We heard that from pretty much every educator I spoke with. Students were telling us it was an issue. You know, the pandemic really exacerbated some of these concerns. I've also talked to educators who, when they're working with a child who's experienced trauma, they often experience trauma as well in that supportive work to educators and support staff. So we felt like this really helped fill that gap. We do have a couple of letters of support in the packet. I know one came in late from the school social worker, so I don't think you have that one yet, but you should have one from NAMI, the Minnesota American Academy of Pediatrics. I know Education Minnesota supports this. In the past, we've had a number of other supporters, and we'll be circling back to them again this year. I'm not aware of anyone who's opposed to this, and this bill has had bipartisan support in the past years as well. So like I said, hopefully the third time is a charm, and my testifier, Amy Jones, is hopefully available online here.
All right, and thank you for this bill introduction. Do we have Amy Jones on remote right now, and are you able to hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. So please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Pryor and members of the committee. My name is Amy Jones. I'm an educational consultant and the chair of the State Mental Health and Schools Work Group. I live in Shoreview. I'm a 30-year licensed classroom teacher and have worked in education at all levels, including as an elected school board member in the Moundsview District, an administrator in Minneapolis and Stillwater, an instructional coach, a classroom teacher, and an adjunct professor at the university level. I am an appointed member of the Minnesota State Advisory Council on Mental Health and also a certified mental health first aid facilitator for youth and adults. As Representative Mueller shared, I've been working with her for the last few years to add a position for a comprehensive mental health lead for students at MDE. We are one of a very few states that does not have such a position, and we need it now more than ever. During our recent conversations with stakeholders, state agencies, and education organizations, everyone agreed that we also need to add a lead position to support and coordinate improved mental health for school staff and teachers as well. Minnesota would be one of the first states to fund a position to lead, coordinate, and support teacher and school staff mental health at a Department of Education. We acknowledge and appreciate all of the work around mental health that is already happening at MDE. Our stakeholders need a point person, someone specific to contact, someone who can coordinate and disseminate all of the best resources, trainings, and practices for the benefit of every student, teacher, and school staff member. Someone who can communicate with stakeholders and seek out promising practices that can be shared and scaled up across the state. Representative Mueller and I have been working to provide more mental health support in Minnesota schools after seeing a growing and timely need. House File 362 would put Minnesota in line with other states that already have mental health in schools leads for students in their Department of Education. This position would not be tied to overseeing a grant. Rather, it would provide a much-needed contact person to address the many challenges and opportunities currently facing our students' mental health. Over time, we've updated this bill to add a position for mental health lead for school staff and teachers as well. This would be a non-grant funded position of the Department of Ed to lead, coordinate, and support school staff and teacher mental health needs. More than ever before, we see our school staff and teachers struggling with their own mental health and the increasing challenge to support the mental health of their students. In the midst of the fourth school year impacted by the repercussions of the pandemic, we have many qualified, passionate, exceptional school staff and teachers leaving the profession. Not only is this a workforce crisis, but the stability of our educational system will be greatly impacted if we continue to hemorrhage these talented and dedicated school staff and teachers. Our state deserves positions to oversee and coordinate this work so that our students and school staff and teachers have the support they need to stay in our schools and be effective and successful. These crucial positions are long overdue, and if the pandemic has shown us anything, it has illuminated this glaring and growing need to improve mental health in our schools. Our students, school staff, and teachers deserve this support. I thank you for your time and hope for your support of House File 362.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. Having no more testifiers, we can move to member discussion and questions. Well, yes, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair. And second time hearing this, very exciting. My question last year was, you know, how does this help my school districts? And I just wanted to give just a little bit of context to this. I did talk to several of my school districts about your bill and about what this would, what would this mean at MDE. Many of them said, you know, okay, great, but I really would just like to have resources, meaning money, in my district to actually help with what's going on here. My question is this. You mentioned earlier how the mental health crisis has been not just showing up out of accident. We've seen it's been growing more and more throughout this time. How come MDE, what has prevented MDE from already implementing something like this without an extra bill like this?
Representative Mueller.
Yeah, thanks. Well, a couple of things first for your school district. This is going to be providing really a menu of options of evidence-based practices that are used by other districts around the state or across the nation. So, for example, I mentioned that we had some suicides in my particular high school where my son went, and the school really didn't know what to do, and especially in that situation, what not to do. And they were looking, and when Ms. Jones was on the school board, they were really looking for that kind of resource without having to reinvent the wheel. And so they needed someplace to go and find out what should we be doing, what are the best practices around that. So that's really where we identified that need. And I certainly support added resources as well for more mental health supports in our schools for our students. So this isn't something that we would do in lieu of that. It's really in addition to that. And with the resources we have available, how can we best use those resources? And that's what this position would be able to do. And then I already forgot the second part of your question. Sorry.
Representative Mueller. Chair, thank you so much. The second part of the question is, you know, as you mentioned, there's schools deal with crises that are happening. You know, I know there's been stuff that happened in our school district, and we've asked other school districts what they've been doing. We go and collaborate with our neighbors and with other, also with other community experts. We go and talk to them as well. Again, not discounting the fact that we do need a point person, but MDE is not allowed to respond to a crisis that we've already seen. So if this was something that was a priority, how come they haven't responded to it already?
Representative Mueller.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm sorry, I forgot the first part of the question. And I don't know if anybody from MDE is here and can answer that question. I do know that one of the issues that we encountered was the fact that right now mental health is covered in many different areas. So there's Department of Health, there's MDE, we've got our school safety centers, and part of this position would be helping to coordinate all of those things. So it doesn't really directly answer why haven't they done this already, but I could speculate that it perhaps is because some of these things are covered in different areas and there's just not anyone bringing these things together.
All right. And I believe that we have representatives from Department of Education that can address that question with more specifics. Thank you for coming forward. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Sure, Madam Chair, members, my name is Shayna Morris, Assistant Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. So Representative Mueller, to your question, I think, and Representative Mueller made the point, there's a lot of work happening at the department in this space. There's no shortage of it. It's happening in a number of spaces. It might be happening with our team working on social emotional learning. It might be happening in our teacher support units. And I will also say a lot of the work that's being done is grant funded that our staff are working on. And so what we're hearing here is that districts are looking for someone to bring all of that together for them. So certainly a district could reach out, a school staff could reach out, and I think if, get to the right place and we could provide great support, our staff could. I think they're just looking for maybe something like an ombuds person to be a little bit more centralized. That's what I've heard.
All right, Representative Dion.
Just a quick follow-up. Thank you, yes. Madam Chair. Thank you for the answer. And honestly, the truth is, you're right. There is a lot of different places where mental health is, with the DHS, with MDE, with all sorts of different places. But that hasn't changed. That has been for years. And so, again, what I'm saying is, if this was a priority, which it seemingly, again, mental health crises haven't popped up overnight, this is something that the MDE could have responded to. You don't need our permission to come and make a medical. I mean, you have over 400 employees at MDE. I'm sure one of them, or you could redirect your funding to one of them. I get that's grant funding. I understand that. I get that. But I'm sure there could have been more direction towards a priority like this, if this is a priority, which it is for me too. I'm sure you could have put some of that in there. And again, I want our students and our staff and our educators to have these resources. I'm saying that I think that there needs to be some better management of our funds and of our positions at MDE. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I may have missed it when I was reading reading the bill, but is there a licensure requirement built into this?
Representative Moeller,
did you hear the question? I'm sorry, hear you completely, yeah. Would you mind
a licensing requirement?
A licensing requirement for who, for these positions?
For these positions, yes.
Yes, thank you for the clarification, Representative Bakeberg. Representative Moeller.
That there is not a licensing requirement in the bill.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other member discussion at this point? Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Representative Moeller for working on this for so many years. I think, like we keep saying, the kids weren't all okay before COVID, but things stumbled along during COVID, and there was a lot of lessons we learned. And I think one of them is the fact that a lot of our school districts turned to MDE more than ever before for guidance and understanding. So I think that pathways maybe being kind of more worn. I'm trying to think of how you don't have a sidewalk, but you have a cow path that ends up, the more you travel on it, it turns into a really straight, steady path. I think this is a good idea to contemplate and look at because our school districts are turning to MDE and our centers across, regional centers across the state for more help and guidance. And when it's such a big issue that we have to tackle, it helps to have that point person to kind of see the whole field. It sounds like a stupid analogy, but my daughter and son both played college soccer, and their coaches always suggested that they become refs because you see the field from a different angle. You see the whole field. And I think this person at MD would really help us see the whole field.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Moeller, for bringing this bill. You know, I was listening to Representative Mueller and the comments about your district and how they talk with their neighboring districts. I really appreciate this because I like how it creates this kind of reservoir of information and tools and resources that, you know, I tell you, when I travel around the state for my job and I'm not doing this, and I go up to places like Grigla, and those places are kind of more isolated from other school districts, it's important that there is a place that they can reach out to get that information and to get those kind of best practices and resources. Not every school district is as close to other school districts. Like, we have the benefit here in the metro sometime, and some of those smaller school districts that don't have the resources and may not be able to find expertise in this particular area to help them, it's really important that they have someone. So this has been a long time coming, and considering what we've gone through the last 3 years, going on 4 years now, well, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Moeller, I think this is a hugely important issue. Thank you for bringing the whole mental health issue is very important. I do feel, and our other comments here, Representative Mueller in particular, kind of hit the nail on the head. I don't hear my schools crying out for another agency position at the Department of Ed. I hear them crying out for additional mental health support, boots on the ground people in our schools, more counselors, more school psychologists, and those boots on the ground people that they need to address their day-to-day student needs. And in government, we always have to prioritize, and I know this is not a finance committee, but we don't have infinite finances. We have to prioritize. And to me, we should be prioritizing our boots on the ground in our schools first. And then if the need develops where we need to pay for a point person at the Department of Ed, we could certainly look at that. But at this point, as Rep. Mueller said, there's nothing stopping the Department of Ed to create a point position there and start organizing that, to put funding into that. And another question for that'll come up in Ed Finance, I think it's putting the cart before the horse myself. I would much rather see us focus on getting schools the ability to meet student needs and those boots on the ground people. So thank you.
And I'm sorry, I had missed earlier that Representative Lee also had a question or a comment.
That's okay, Madam Chair. I just wanted us to step back actually and reflect that we are currently not fully funding our schools so that each school has at least one school nurse even, right, or one social worker. And so I thank all the members in the committee for making the point that mental health has become a much bigger issue, right, amongst our students in the past 2 years. But this is a temporary patch, right, to the many schools across the state that cannot afford to even employ a nurse full time. I would love to work with folks on the other side. This is not education finance, but you know, perhaps we do want to fully fund our public school system to ensure that they have all the teachers that they need and the support staff who are so critical for a well-rounded education.
Just a quick comment.
I thought we were coming to the closer discussion. Traditionally, we let Representative Bennett close out the member conversation, but I know we're starting out a new conversation that we would like to continue with. So
I'll just note that there are bills coming.
Representative Frazier, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are bills coming that will be supportive of boots on the ground, so I'm looking forward to support of the entire committee. Thank you.
Okay. All right, and I did want to make closing comments too. You know, we, from the first time you entered this position as a representative and in all the committees that we're hearing, we talk about how far behind in really addressing the mental health needs in this state. And it's all of the things, not just one that is the solution to it, but all of them. And I will highlight again that one reason why Representative Moeller is here is because her school district, they know from firsthand experience what they didn't have when they needed it most. And so what we're trying to do is set up something preventively, which is when a school district has a tragedy that is devastating to not just the immediate family, but to the whole school and the whole community, that the school has the resources on hand, on speed dial, for what are the right things to do and what are the things not to do. And I do want to go back to highlight this tragic experience that was in, that has been in more than one school district in Minnesota. And I'm grateful that it's not in every school district or in a recent fashion. But I know that this is one of the many things that we can do to take steps forward in building this infrastructure to address the mental health needs of our students and our citizens in Minnesota. So I will turn now to you, Representative Moeller, for closing remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion. And again, this is two positions. This is not taking away money for school districts to hire mental health supports or the whatever assistance we're going to give for them to have those support staff on the ground working with our students. That is incredibly important. And I also just want to highlight the fact that these positions can help schools use their resources better. I remember hearing about, I think it was Hopkins maybe, where they had a mental health clinic right at the front of their school, and they were learning that the times that it was open, they weren't getting as many students in because it was right at that time where the students were doing their activities, so they had to make some adjustments. So that kind of information could be useful to another school district who's thinking about doing the same kind of thing. They've already learned from maybe what another school did about the time of day that works better, and so they can do that. So the resources they have there, the boots on the ground workers are actually being used to their fullest potential to help our students. And so it is two positions, and I understand that there might be some discomfort with that, but I want you to think about how we can best use our resources when we have these positions like this, helping our school districts statewide. So anyway, I thank you so much for the opportunity to present this. And whenever we talk about suicide, I do want to remind folks that we have, especially now, a new hotline number that's 988. And if people are struggling, they can call that or text MN to 741-741. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your closing remarks. All right. With that, Representative Joachim renews her motion to recommend to re-refer House File 362 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Okay. The motion prevails, and House File 362 is on its way to Education Finance. Thank you for being with us, Representative Moeller. All right, and now we'll gather up and be ready for House File 345, Representative Hussein. Yes, there he is.
It's kind of awkward to be not a sight.
get used to it right now. Get a feel for it. All right. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hussein. We will be hearing House File 345. And members, it's our intention to lay over this bill. And we'll start by having a motion from Representative Frazier. Representative Frazier, would you like to make a motion to move House File 345 before the committee?
That is my motion, Chair. So
thank you, Representative Frazier. All right, the bill is before us then. All right. You ready?
Thank you,
Representative Hussein, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Samakab Hussein. I do represent District 65A. Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee members. I am proud to introduce House File 345 as it's been long overdue conversation for our community. We are proud.
And Representative Hussein, I do apologize. I think you have an A1 amendment, and that we'd like to also get that in front of the committee too, and take up the bill with the as amended with the A1. And I really apologize for interrupting you. We have the A1 amendment to adopt.
Yes.
And so, Representative Frazier, would you please move the A1 amendment?
Madam Chair, I will move the A1 amendment to House File 345 to be before the committee.
All right. And Representative Hussein, could you mention briefly the content of the A1 amendment?
As we talked about, Madam Chair, and I do accept that for the amendment. And okay. For just the clarity, for House File 345, as moving forward.
With the A1 amendment.
And I accept that amendment.
And the A1 amendment does put the bill in the form that the author would like to have before we present it.
So, and that was given a clear clarification for the bill. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. So let's take a vote on the A1 amendment. All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, the author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, members. The A1 amendment is adopted. And please return to your testimony, Representative Hussein, of House File 345 as amended.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And the committee members, I am proud to introduce House File 345. It has been a long overdue conversation within our community. We are here today to discuss the nature around the effective utilizing accountability and structure that is more effective and reflecting in our student of color. House File 3456, appropriate funding to develop a pilot program used alternative model of education accountability. The world's best workforce accountability system established in 2013 has exacerbated educational disparity in our student, and it has not been working for us. We know that its metric system used to measure the personal development and educational outcome our student are inactive and do not accurately reflect the needs of our student. Accountability instruction in the federal level and state policy have not worked for our student, family, and the community, primarily because criteria in centered systematic racism. House File 345 include the work-led Pittsburgh United States community, which aligned with the recommendation organization economic development. We have a unique opportunity to take this first step value who our student and our community by embedding their need and wisdom into accountability framework. There are a lot of things that we could do together, but we have to listen to our community and the people of color. As you can see, the reflect of this room, how many people are showing up because they care about our student, and they want to make sure that a student is getting the education that they need in the schoolwork. I wanted to affirm House File 345 does not eliminate the requirement for administering Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment Test. So I want to clear that out. We're not trying to eliminate, but we're trying to find out more implement that can work for our community and educational. The opportunity to reduce injustice is right now. The opportunity to empower our young generation is right now. Success is a long-term hope, but it starts with us right now and how we empower our young generations for their education, especially people of color. The systematic has not been working for all of us. I do graduate in public schools, but we do have a lot of opportunity. We had a lot of help, but our young generations is left out, and they're not getting the help that they need. I will yell for testimony, Samantha, if she's here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I do have a list of testifiers in support of your bill as part of your presentation. First up, I have Samantha Diaz. And if you'll proceed, identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, and members. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Samantha Diaz, and I am the director of Pillsbury United Communities, Office of Public Charter Schools. I am here on behalf of Pillsbury United Communities, a 140-year-old nonprofit organization that operates four community centers and six social enterprises in Minneapolis and has regional impact. We serve primarily Black, Brown, and Indigenous people, people who are refugees and immigrants, and people who are poor and working class. We take on projects that invest in the long-term prosperity, equity, and justice in our state. We serve young people during the school day as a public charter school authorizer of 18 schools and via district programming partnerships in Minneapolis. Outside of school, we support youth via clubs and programs in our community centers, along with internship opportunities. Annually, we provide over 200 internships for youth in Minneapolis and serve 9,000 students across the state of Minnesota as an authorizer. I would like to thank Representative Hussein for his leadership and boldness in championing House File 345, which is a bill to establish a pilot program to improve educational outcomes and accountability. At Pillsbury United, we have spent the past 2 years investing in and developing a ground-up, whole-child-focused accountability framework that is built for and designed by the students, families, educators, and community we serve. In 2021, our team set out to redesign our accountability systems for the schools in our portfolio to align with our values as an organization and the assets in our schools. Our goal has been to develop an accountability system that celebrates schools' innovative, student-centered, and community-responsive practices while also calling on all of us to do better and to be better. No longer will we accept the narrative that our students are failing. Our students, families, and communities are incredible assets that bring infinite wisdom to our education system if we only really listened to them and acted. At Pillsbury United, we engage with our ultimate authority, our community, to identify what they believe are the most critical measures a school should be held accountable to providing our students. This is a credible, rigorous, and valid reporting mechanism because we did the work. We talked to our community, and from those conversations with hundreds of our stakeholders, we developed the framework that lives in the legislation before you today. Our hope is that the new equity framework can be a tool for understanding where our schools are strong and where they need support, supporting schools' internal continuous improvement efforts, and providing us as the authorizer and our individual schools with data and stories that help communicate a meaningful and positive narrative about students, communities, and our schools. House File 345 would allow this rigorous framework to serve as an alternative to the statutorily required World's Best Workforce reporting for our eight high schools. During this pilot phase, similarly to the World's Best Workforce, the applicable high schools will still have to administer the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment, which will be posted and available on the MDE report card. However, moving this bill forward will allow the schools and us, our eight high schools, and us, the ability to focus on the accountability measures that have been identified as needed by our students, families, and communities. Our eight high schools have been part of this process every step of the way and are ready to submit reporting and be held accountable to measures that matter most to our students, families, and communities. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, for your consideration of House File 345. And I urge you to support this innovative way to bring more meaningful school accountability intended to improve outcomes.
Thank you, Ms. Diaz. Next up, I see Susan Patrick.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And can you hear us okay?
Yes, thank you.
Thank
yes.
you. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Susan Patrick. I am the president and CEO of the Aurora Institute. Aurora Institute is a national nonprofit. We study global and national best practices in education. Our mission is to transform education and advance breakthrough policies and practices to ensure high-quality learning for all. I'm testifying to support House File 345 to create a program to improve outcomes and to begin innovating beyond what is currently done, to explore next-generation accountability. A pilot is a first step to begin to build next-gen accountability based on global best practices. We have published more than 100 reports that have been peer-reviewed, policy issue briefs on topics ranging from next-gen accountability, assessment, competency-based education, and innovation. We study top-performing education systems around the globe and draw from the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD's comprehensive international reviews of best practices which lead to improvement in education. As more states around the U.S. and countries embark on ambitious work in creating a world-class education system, they are equity-seeking. To summarize global best practices and policy, our research recommends encourage accountability systems examining a broader range of outcomes, student experiences, culture, and community engagement as they are creating performance frameworks. An example is in Alberta, Canada, with what is called the Assurance Framework, and in New Zealand, which is a global best practice. They do this co-designing with communities locally and with reciprocity. Prioritize quality of teaching, assessment, and learning in both formal and informal learning environments. Colorado's legislature in 2019 created a local accountability pilot and now has 19 school districts participating. Foster partnerships between communities, parents, institutions, and education systems to meet students' needs and ensure high-performing schools. Kentucky is currently exploring creating a new statewide accountability system, engaging communities, students, and parents, and opening new pathways for learning. Commissioner of Education Glass says that now is the time to work together to create a new future in education. Promote equitable access to resources, services, and opportunities, especially for students furthest from opportunity. Vermont, as well as California's core districts, are piloting a next-gen multiple measures student accountability system focused on supports and basic needs for a well-rounded, student-centered education system. And develop a culture of continuous improvement in schools with communities, parents, students, educators, and leaders taking ownership of school outcomes through reciprocity. Research supports the pilot proposed in 345. And importantly, treating our children in schools in ways that respond to the unique needs of our communities is the way we must think about equity. Across the nation, education policymakers are recognizing the one-size-fits-all education system we've inherited and that we currently have cannot meet the unique needs of our young people. Thank you for the opportunity to share our research. We support 345, and please let us know if we can provide any technical assistance to this esteemed body for you and your colleagues as you consider how to create effective pilots for next-gen accountability. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have, I believe, a number of students that are going to be able to testify today. And maybe if they can start coming up. The first one I have is Akila. Welcome to the committee. And as you settle in, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Hi, my name is Akila Humphrey. I'm a junior at the Minnesota Internship Center. I'm here to talk about why career exploration and preparation is important. It's important to me because I believe that all schools should be held accountable for the responsibility of having all students prepare for the after high school experience. Schools do not equip all students with the right or any information for after high school options. Studies show from Dallas, Texas University that 38.5% of African Americans have the lowest after high school completion rate. Something that has worked well for me is the Minnesota Internship Center. They have a great after high school preparation program, such as required meetings about a wider range of options, also on campus visits. What I believe that would address this issue would be unlimited resources and extensive opportunities for after high school, like a comprehensive range of trade alternatives, information about military options, information about scholarships like requirements, availability, and affordability, also successful grant options, and information for avoiding student loans and credit card debts, also information for schools that further the education of the students' interests. Thank you for listening to my testimony today, and I urge you to support House File 345.
Thank you, Akila. We appreciate you being here today. Next up, I have Jacqueline. Thank you for being with us, Jacqueline. Once you're all set, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jackie Height, and I'm a senior at Minnesota Online High School, located in St. Paul, but all of my schoolwork is done from home. I'm here today to talk about how schools need to be held accountable for students' social, emotional, and mental health. I used to go to a public school before I switched to Minnesota Online High School, and it was honestly very difficult because I was bullied every single year of school, and it seems like it never got resolved and there was never any action taken, which is why it continued. This is a topic close to my heart because I had to switch to Minnesota Online High School due to being sent death threats, and it never got resolved. I didn't feel safe or heard at school due to nothing being resolved. I have a sibling going into middle school next year, which is when the worst part of the bullying started for me. And I never want anybody to feel the way I felt or be told the things that I was told. Bullying takes such a toll on someone's mental health and can possibly result in suicide. According to bullyingstatistics.org, bullied students are 2 to 9 times more likely to commit suicide, and I would like to see those numbers drop. I'm asking you, Madam Chair and members, to work to help hold schools accountable for students' social, emotional, and mental health. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And finally, we have Kaliana. How about that? Something? Thank you for coming forward. And when you're all set and comfortable, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello. Hello, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I am Kaliana Morrell, and I am a 12th grader at Minnick High School. I'm here today to talk to you all on why I feel schools should be held accountable for supplying students with basic needs. I feel this is important because all students need it, but not all students have it. And while at Minnick, staff helped me with basic needs by supplying me with a bus card to get to school and work every day, and also a winter coat. These are both small things, but they help me a lot. in my last high school didn't have the resources, but they also didn't offer any. I didn't have a really good transportation to school, so I wasn't able to get to school, and that caused my grades to slip, and I became unmotivated. I also feel that social, emotional, and mental support is very important, because school should be a place where you should feel safe and have someone to talk to, and this can benefit students like it benefited me. Thank you for listening to my testimony, and I encourage you to support House File 345.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate hearing from you. Thank you, students, for joining us also in person. We appreciate that you're able to find the time and be here and inform our work. I believe we do have a public testifier to join us, Matt Schaefer. Thank you. Please identify yourself and proceed.
You bet. Tough acts to follow. Chair Pryor, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Schaefer. I'm a teacher, and I'm the policy director at EdAllies, which is a statewide education advocacy nonprofit that works to advance policy so that every child in the state has access to the rigorous and engaging education they deserve. I'm here to testify regarding House File 345. Thank you, Representative Hussein, for authoring the bill. A school that works well for kids and families ought to be doing what House File 345 proposes to measure on lines 1.20 through 2.20. Schools that do right by kids should be providing mental health services, access to extracurriculars, teaching a culturally relevant and accurate history of our state, and using restorative justice practices. These absolutely are ingredients of an equitable, engaging, and rigorous learning environment for kids. We should measure these inputs and hold schools accountable to them, not instead of, but in addition to, the academic outcomes that we want to see for students and that we know all of our kids are capable of. Getting the elements being proposed in House File 345 right for kids should make schools a student-centered, affirming, and engaging place to learn and improve academic outcomes and shrink gaps. A results-oriented accountability system must measure academic outcomes. They are core to the purpose of school. Thank you to Representative Hassan for opening up a conversation about what accountability can look like for our schools. And thank you to the student testifiers and supporters for your advocacy today. Your voices belong here. Our state needs you here in order to make better policy choices. Chair Pryor, thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you all for your public service to our state.
My name is Nada Hassan. It's Representative Hussein. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hussein, for, again, clarifying and reminding us. Thank you. Well, thank you to all of our testifiers, and we're going to have member discussion now, and I think we've had a nice introduction to what we're talking about, but now it's time for questions. And I think, as has been said, we're opening up an important conversation about school accountability and the best way to have measures of performance for that. But this is the beginning of the conversation. We are laying the bill over after today. And with that, member discussion or questions at this point. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you so much, Representative Hussein, for bringing this forward. And Ms. Diaz, I've had the pleasure of talking to you about this bill earlier. One of the concerns that I have is everything that that we were talking about. Yes, this is what a school needs to look like. We need to hold people accountable. The wonderful student testifiers that are talking about how, you know, college and career resources, all of this is super important, and making sure that our schools are a safe place and having a place for them to be and so that they can fit in, all of that is really important. It really emphasizes how having other choices for our students is really important. But one of the things I talked to you, especially Ms. Diaz earlier, was we can't have schools be the all for everyone, right? And some of the things that we heard was that we need to have students to be held accountable for supplying basic needs for students. I've been a teacher for almost 20 years. Students cannot learn when they don't have their basic needs met. They cannot. Does this bill allow community connections to help our students instead of just, hey, we need to give all the resources straight to the school, and here's a pile of money, they have to supply everything. Does this bill provide the flexibility to connect with community resources rather than, and this is directed to the author, does it provide community resources rather than just having the school be the one-stop shop?
So I'm going to direct it to the bill's author first, Representative Hussein, and then if you want to also include one of your testifiers in the answer, we can
redirect
that.
Yeah, we'll have Ms. Dice answer this.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you, Representative Mueller, for the question. I want to start by emphasizing that this particular piece of legislation is hyper-localized to the 8 schools in our portfolio. And so there's 8 high schools in our portfolio, charter high schools that we authorize that we're trying to make this applicable to only during the pilot phase. And so with respect to your question around basic needs, I also want to emphasize that each of the measures that have been codified into the framework, those were what our communities and families and schools were asking for. And so for us as an authorizer, we believe it's vitally important to listen to our customer, listen to the communities that came to us demanding we hold our schools accountable in a different way. And so while I hear you on your question, I think we just are reemphasizing that this was what our community asked for, so basic needs support. And when you look in our portfolio of schools, our high schools, just over 3,000 students, 90% students of color or indigenous students. Around 6 of our 8 high schools serve a large population of students that have not been served well in previous educational settings. And so these are high needs, and this is what's codified in the framework.
Thank you, Ms. Diaz, for that answer and follow-up. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. Thank you for listening to your community and listening to what they need. I know that just for me reinforces how badly we need to have our communities involved in how we can help our students. That just reinforces to me how badly we need to have choices for our students to find a place for them to live and learn. And I think that, again, it really reinforces the fact that, you know, when schools are responding to their community and they are finding those resources in their community, that it does make a school better. So thank you, Madam Chair. And still thinking about and stewing over this, but I really appreciate your answer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hussein, for bringing this bill. Thank you, Ms. Diaz, for being here to testify. And thank you to the amazing students who testified as well. I always like when our young people show up. I always say our young people are our salvation, so I appreciate that. Kind of in line with what Representative Mueller said, you know, I do think it's important that community plays a role and provides input into what they need. I also think it's important that when we have the resources and the ability that we put those resources where they need to be. We do have the resources and we do have the ability, and it is our job to provide those resources so that our kids can reach their highest potential in every facet in terms of their educational attainment. And I think this can help do that. I also think that some of the things that are moving through in terms of our full service community legislation that is moving through, that will also help do that. You know, we talk about putting getting resources from the community. The fact of the matter is we have for decades under-resourced our communities, and that has come from these bodies here, from the individuals that have served in the bodies here through that have the ability to appropriate. So I see these measures as a way of rectifying that. It's still a long way to go before we get to where we should be right now, but I see this as a way to do that. these resources here that are being proposed to be appropriated, as well as the resources for full-service community schools. Because what our communities cannot provide because of being under-resourced, if we put them into our schools and allow those options to be there for our kids and for our community members and their parents, we'll be the better for it, and our communities will be the better for it. Educational outcomes will be better as well, and Minnesota overall will be better for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fraser. Representative Yua King.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question is to Ms. Diaz. You mentioned the 8 schools in your portfolio, in your charter school portfolio, your charter school authorizer. Can you remind us, charter schools, they're public schools, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me. Sorry. Right. Yeah, you were right on. Right on. Yes. Ms. Diaz.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Yua King. Yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just quick follow-up. And just kind of a reminder of the charter school movement in Minnesota, and I still have to go back in history. They were really created to be our lab schools, our, you know, places where folks could kind of go outside the box and try to figure out what would best fit our kids, and then bring that back in to see how we could replicate that system-wide. And if I haven't, I really apologize. You came into my office last week, and I haven't had time to really dig into this, but just another question from what I'm understanding from the bill is you kind of looked at the framework in World's Best Workforce, worked with your community to find out, is that really measuring the success of our kids? And you're coming to us with an idea to try a different framework within your 8 schools to see if it works, and then see if it's something we could maybe tweak World's Best Workforce, to create this as the new system. Is that basically, and you're just asking for an exemption from some of the requirements in World's Best Workforce to try this model?
And
that was a long question. I'm sorry.
And again, we're addressing Ms. Diaz.
Madam Chair, Representative Yua Keem, so we see ourselves very much as a partner to the state of Minnesota and Minnesota Department of Education. So what this would allow us is for our 8 charter high schools, public charter high schools, to use this framework as essentially as its World's Best Workforce reporting for the pilot phase. And so through our learnings and our evaluation over the course of the pilot period, we'd then be able to support the department in thinking about what can be tweaked in the World's Best Workforce, what could be learned from this pilot phase.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Yua King. I'll turn to Representative Bigber.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan.
Hussein,
sorry. I'm sorry. Ms. Diaz and the students, I would echo what Rep. Fraser talked about. You guys are amazing. I mean, you guys knocked it out of the park. So, the young lady taking a picture out in the hallway. I think she's back there somewhere. So just a point of clarification. So, and just to back up, I think a lot of us would agree that there are serious flaws with the MCAs, the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments. So, Are your students still going to take those assessments?
Thank you. Ms. Diaz.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, our schools will still be required, excuse me, will still be required to administer the MCAs, which will then obviously be posted on the MDE report card, so we're not skirting accountability from that perspective. We're just going to be able to be hyper-focused on the measures that matter to our families and communities.
Thank you. Follow-up?
And I would love, and I think that would be great information for education policy to really dig in and discuss, because it'll be a very valid data point of success from a comparable MCA standpoint, but then also a locally controlled and determined assessment model that really could be a launching point for us to discuss at this committee. So thank you.
Okay, well, we'll sign you up for the future work on this working group.
Thank you, Mr. Representative. And I say
comments from Representative Hussein.
As I say in my opening, we will continue have them take the Minnesota comprehensive testing.
All right. I'm going to, Representative Bennett, you have any closing questions and comments? And then we'll go back to the author, Bill's author.
Thank you. I do. What a great conversation. And Representative Hussein, I applaud you for bringing forth Ms. Diaz as well. Innovation, and I've always been a champion of innovation and freeing up our schools to try things like this. I think more power to you. We need more local control like this. And my greatest concern, I guess, in this, and I may have missed that, so I guess I'll ask the question, but are there measures here? I see measures. Students feel prepared for post-secondary, or a student is feeling good about, families feel good about what the child's learned, but are there actual measures for reading, math, and writing? Because those skills are hugely essential for success anywhere, and we don't need students and families that feel happy. You can be really happy and be illiterate. We want these young people to be successful. So are there measures for these academics? I don't see them in the framework, really.
And who would like that?
I'm sorry.
Ms. Diaz.
Madam Chair and Representative Bennett, thank you for the question. You're right. Basic skills, reading, writing, math, that's very important. That's what our schools should be doing. Respectfully, the current system of accountability has been reductive towards thinking that focusing accountability on basic skills will solve our educational problems. And so, you know, we have two decades worth of evidence that emphasis on just the high-stakes standardized testing has not worked. And we cannot continue to keep doing that same thing and expect results for the students in our portfolio, for the kids that we're referring to, that we are serving. You know, our students and families and communities told us exactly what they need to be successful in the framework, and so that's what it's codified. That's in the respective framework, just in authorizing our overall accountability system through contract goals with our individual schools. Excuse me. We do have measures that are, again, localized, whether it be NWEA growth. So we hold our schools accountable to those pieces. In a different process of our overall menu of what we do as an authorizer.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up, Representative.
Madam Chair, thank you. And thank you for that, Ms. Diaz. And I'd love to talk to you more about this because it intrigues me a lot. I again, am concerned. We have state funding going into this. And we absolutely need to revamp majorly our whole assessment system. It's not working. I will agree with you. But we also, there are good tests and assessments to determine if a child can read, write, and do math. And we can't just, as another testifier said up there, just dump those and say, let's just base things on if people feel good about this. Because I mean, in my first grade classroom, I could have said, I'm going to give all my students fuzzy blankets because I know they'll feel good, and slippers to wear because that's more comfortable. And I could maybe do that if I had the funds for it, but I'm accountable for the outcomes. Can they read at grade level when they leave first grade? And so we can't just exit out of that kind of accountability because it does concern me. Our kids, the number one successful element, and I think Booker T. Washington, one of my heroes, said this, is education. And if students and children are not able to read, write, and do math, we've got a big problem. So I do think this needs to be re-looked at, and maybe I'm missing it. I'd love to talk to you, either one of you, more. But thank you for this. I love the innovation. I'd like all of our schools to be able to innovate like this, but I still feel, being state funds are being used, that there must be some kind of academic accountability that we can all agree upon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Bennett. And I'm before returning to the bill's author for closing comments, I do want to thank the committee who are taking up this bill and engaging in the discussion. And and for Representative Hussein for bringing it forward and getting us started on this discussion and bringing us these stories about innovations that are happening right now, bringing us the student voices that are speaking to its value. And to you, Representative Hussein, for closing comments.
Thank you, Ms. Bennett, for bringing up that. We need to have an honest conversation if we want to improve our young generation, and education is the key for successful. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, testifiers, for taking the time to share your insight and your experience with us today. We have a unique opportunity in Minnesota to lead the future of accountability for our young generations. We cannot do it alone. We need everybody to be on the table. We want to make sure that we want our kids to succeed, so make sure they read, write, and math, so they can have a better jobs, so they can, they are the one who's going to replace us in the future. But if you don't empower them right now, there will be a lack of opportunity. So I hope we can continue discussing this palette, and everybody is welcome. As the same way that we had family and student has been evolving, so I look forward to discuss with you more, and we look forward to move this ballot forward. As we been studying for the past 2 years, we would like to bring a great outcome for our young generation so we can have a very successful. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Frazier renews his motion to lay over House File 345.
That is my motion, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Well, that was the business before us today, committee, and we are adjourned.